Our guest in the second hour of today's program, Kaya Cater, a folk singer from Toronto, Canada. Her last album, Ninepin, we're going to talk a little bit about that. We'll play some music from it. She's an absolutely wonderful performer. Got a chance to see her live at Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival in 2018 and made sure that we had the opportunity to speak later about her album, Ninepin, about her journey. And in the middle of our conversation, she's going to announce a brand new album coming out in the fall of 2018 on the Smithsonian Folkways record. You're going to want to listen to this really, really fascinating young lady. Really happy to have, for the first time, the Unreal Bluegrass, Kaya Cater. How are you?
I'm good, Steve. Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, I was so happy to... the listeners know that I just got back from Grey Fox Bluegrass Festival, and every year the schedule comes out, and you're kind of like, you know, these things I have to do, these are things I really have to do. One of the things that I put on my calendar, as soon as it fleshed out on the schedule, was I had to see you perform. I knew of your music, and I made sure that I could find a place comfortably to watch you perform. It was high on my list.
Well, thank you for coming out. I know it was kind of the beginning of a hot day when I was performing on the main stage, so I really appreciated, you know, people coming out to, you know, just to give my music a chance and listen to, you know, something a little different than traditional bluegrass.
Well, it is, and your performance was you and a bass player whose name I've forgotten. You can help me with that. They did a wonderful job.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, his name is Jared Engel.
Jared Engel. I knew it, and then I just forgot. Just right before we went on the air here, I forgot it. I knew him and watched that. Your album, Ninepin, the last one that I think that came out is on, what label is that? Is it King?
Yeah, so that came out on Kingswood Records, that's now sort of it's been archived or defunct now. But at the time, you know, they were really interested in putting out this record and the one prior to that, my debut album, Sorrowbound. And, you know, that's kind of how I started really thinking about trying to get my music into the United States because I do come from Canada and I live in Toronto, which is where I'm talking to you from now. But yeah, it came at a really good time, you know, when I was trying to sort of get my music into people's ears.
And before we get into what I saw on the performance, and also I wanted to talk about this this most recent album, and I think you're probably going to have some other things coming out, which we'll talk about real soon. I won't let you get away without talking about those things. But I know your story as it relates to Grey Fox, and you mentioned that you're in Toronto now, but not everybody listening to Unreal Bluegrass will immediately recognize the brief version. I don't need the long, but where you're from and why you're interested in music is as it is.
Yeah, sure. That's a great question. So I'm originally from Montreal, Quebec. My mom's side of the family, you know, pretty musical. My aunt is a huge influence on me, and she sings on both of my my albums that are out right now. You know, folk music was a huge part of my upbringing. And my mom actually ended up working for some folk festivals. She got really involved in folk music and bluegrass music alike, and first she was a fan, so she kind of discovered bluegrass music after the Oh Brother Where Art Thou soundtrack came out, and she actually wanted to go to Merlefest originally, but it was too far, you know, for the amount of time that she had off, so she found Grey Fox and took me there. It was all, you know, quite an organic thing. I don't think I ever went and sought it out particularly, but I was lucky enough for it to be in my environment naturally. And so, you know, growing up at Grey Fox, they have the Bluegrass Academy for kids, and it was, you know, it's a free program, and it was a way for me to play music, and so she stuck me in that. And I started playing bluegrass banjo for a little while, and then I ended up switching to clawhammer just because I really loved old-time music.
Well, the references, the music that you pull from, of course, you get real close in Canadian folk music and American folk, especially close to New York. They're so similar, and their backgrounds are much more similar than people recognize the origins of the music and the tunes. You draw from a lot of references. Not only do you do that folk thing, but you're doing a lot of research, as I hear in your music, to try to just discover some other things that might be relevant to what you want to say.
Yeah, I mean, I grew up with the idea or this kind of implicit idea that the past informs the future.
Yeah.
And the present. And so, you know, I really, you know, loved and kind of thrived in these environments of studying old music. It was just so compelling to me, and there was so much weight, and the songs had, you know, so much to say about history that I found far more interesting than, you know, reading a dry history book, was to sort of discover a song and then access the history through that. And, you know, those were the early years, and you know, I think playing the banjo really lent itself to those kind of explorations and really opened doors for me and opened worlds, you know, and I got to sing and play with people that, you know, carry history with them. And so, yeah, it was just a really fascinating way for me to engage with the world around me. And, you know, it didn't stop there. I think at some point I really felt that, you know, okay, these, you know, studying these old songs are great. Now what can I add? What can I add to roots music? And that's really what kind of spurred my songwriting along. And that's been, you know, more and more the major focus of my life is, you know, or of my art anyway, was writing songs.
So much of your performance and the Nine Pen CD, which is the one that's most recent, it is, if I can say this the right way, there's a very spiritual feeling to it. There's also a very affirmative affirmation feeling to the lyrics. St. Elizabeth, some of these tunes were just, that was my favorite one, still is my favorite one, but as far as what gets stuck in my head, that was stuck in my head until just recently. And another one has replaced it, which is good, because that means that upon re-listening to your tunes, you pick up something new. But you have this almost this spiritual, there's this almost this deep communication that you want to get forward. And I would almost say old soul full, but I don't want people to think I'm talking about old soul music. It's like you have an old soul.
Well, thank you. And
I mean it to be a good thing.
It's finally out of your head.
I really get back, but I mean that in a good sense. I mean you're not the oldest participant in this music, and you're not the youngest, but your music informs so much, not only by the tone of your voice and the playing. Your playing accompanies exactly what you mean to communicate, but your lyrics are just really, you can just listen and pick up something different each time. You're saying a lot. You're saying a lot in your music.
Well, thank you. You know, I think that it's glad. I'm glad to know that translates, because it really is my intention in songwriting is to create these landscapes by which people can sort of get lost in.
Yeah, good word. Good word.
And
landscapes, yeah.
You know, and I have so much admiration for songwriters that have been able to do that, you know, both Canadian and American. There are so many that I could name, you know, Leonard Cohen, Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, just to name a few of the Canadian ones. And then, Buffy St. Marie was a pretty big influence.
Oh, Buffy St. Marie. Now, I'm an older person than you, but where did you pick up on Buffy St. Marie?
You know, I was surprised because absolutely. And she was part of that, you know, 60s folk music revival. And I kind of feel like she kind of bypassed my universe until I saw her playing at a small festival in Ontario. She was playing solo, and she was headlining the entire night.
Oh, man.
And she was just so mesmerizing and so real. I found that she had this realness to her that you never thought that she was putting on an act, and she was just playing this music that was, you know, clearly showed her development into her 70s. She was just pushing her boundaries as an artist, which I really admired. You know, that her most recent record, Power in the Blood, is just a beautiful album. And so I started sort of diving back and back and back into the 70s, and then I found this recording that she had done with a mouth harp of Cripple Creek. And it was so groovy, and I just kind of feel like she just represents so much of what I would love to be. And it's always a thrill to find people like that, who have just done exactly what they wanted with their lives and with their music. And, you know, she absolutely represents that for me.
You know, it's funny, I always thought that she had some commercial success when I was younger, and I don't know if that's what she was trying to do, but I always felt like she was doing her music, and if there was commercial success, it was okay. Sure, it was fine, but, I mean, it was not her driving thing as to sell records. I always felt like she was. I'm glad you picked up on her, and I'm glad you brought that name back to me again, because that tickles me that someone of your age, that you do exactly what everyone should do, is you go back and you research the source of that and who inspired those people, and you find all these great little treasures. So not that, and you got to see her. I've never seen her.
Oh yeah, you gotta. I mean, if she comes to your area, then yeah. I mean, you already know the you know, the absolute monster of a musician that she is, yeah. and I mean that in the most positive way. And she captured like 4,000 people. One person on stage. It was like nothing I'd ever seen. I'm getting goosebumps right now.
That's great. That's great. And then she informs you as you're going forward and you're developing your own sound. But you do have that communication. You're a communicator, and your music is intended to do that, whatever the message is, which I think overall these songs, I still think there's this there's this affirmation of either life or choices or situations where someone, you know, recovers or just there's just things in your music that is – I would think people would listen and think, I get it, and yeah, thanks. I mean, to me, it's a thankful, as I'm listening, I'm thinking, yeah, this makes a lot of sense, and the message that you're putting out is, you know, sometimes it may sound sadder because of the tone of your voice, or but actually, I think the lyrics are real positive.
Oh, thank you so much.
I hope that's what you're trying to do.
Yeah, no, it absolutely is, and I actually have, you know, that's the first time, you know, I've gotten that response in an interview, and you get it, so thank you so much for saying that.
You're welcome, and on the album, too, you do play, what I would call a clawhammer banjo for people listening. There's not going to be a resonator on it, you don't have any picks, and you play it very well behind yourself, and there's all kinds of ways to describe it, but... On the album, there's a trumpet every once in a while. There's an accordion every once in a while. There's electric instruments, electric guitar. So even though those are there, the presentation of your music is still, even with those other instruments, is still sparse enough, and I think intentionally so, that the song itself is never overwhelmed. And when I saw you, it was you and Jared, and on the album, I'm thinking, okay, she's adding other instruments in here, but still nothing overpowers the song and the lyric. And the message that you're getting across.
Yeah, well, thanks so much. That was a really big intention of mine and of my producer, Chris Bartosz, at the time. I got to give him credit for that as well. I think, you know, he took a lot of time with the songs, and I think it is a challenge for somebody to not overproduce, to not want to put their mark all over everything, and especially those batch of songs. They needed the treatment that they got, which was, you know, like you said, just space and air and
right.
time.
Right.
And, you know, and I stand by that album. I think it's really easy for an artist to, and, you know, we're all guilty of it, but for an artist to sort of look back on their own work or their own records and, you know, say, oh, I wish I'd done this differently. Yeah. And of course, there is that in everything. I mean, I think that's just part of being a person in the world. But
an album is a snapshot.
No, go.
An album is a snapshot, and that's it. And then you move forward, and you don't have to be look back critically, but it's just a snapshot and a glimpse. And as you go forward, you're going to change things as you perform these tunes. That's natural.
Absolutely. I mean, even with this record that I have coming out in the fall, you know, there's more. Going on, there's definitely more going on, but you know, my goal was to make the skeleton of the song
that's good
strong enough to stand, you know, regardless of that. So yeah.
Harlem's Little Blackbird on the nine pin. It's your vocal, and I think you're dancing.
So my dancing is definitely not that good.
No, but I mean.
So I appreciate that. It was actually my good friend, one of my best friends. Her name is Catherine Maynor, and she's an incredible tap dancer. She lives in the D.C. area, and we've collaborated on a lot of stuff, and she's joining me for some dates on my tours in 2019. She is expecting a baby pretty soon, so she's kind of out of commission for a while. But, she was the one that kind of penned that rhythm.
Yeah.
And I heard her practicing it one day in the studio, and I just said, it just kind of caught my ear, and I said, can you do that again? And so she did, and I recorded her dancing those steps in a loop.
Okay.
And I took it home, and it took me a long time to put a melody to it and to put a song to it, and I tried to apply all these different melodies that I already had in my, you know, in my memory bank. But none of them fit. And so I really had to sit down and think about, the rhythm with which the musicality with which she performed those steps. And finally, Harlem's Little Blackbird came out.
There are instrumental tunes on this album, Nine Pins. You do that. You don't have to sing all the time. There's also, I don't mean that you don't have to sing all the time, but all your music doesn't have to be carried by vocals.
True.
And when you have a gorgeous, deep voice that just, you know, at Grey Fox, it gets a little noisy, but everybody was so focused on your performance. As I was kind of hanging around backstage where I get to look out and see, watch the people. And I think your voice gets very, very well received by the audience. They know they should. They know they're listening to something that they will get something out of. But aside from that, there are Hangman's Reel is an instrumental. There are instrumentals on here. There's also three tunes that are just sort of, I think you put them on here as past, passing, and to come. But they're kind of like interludes, or maybe like, I've heard this description, I'll steal it from a smart person. They're palate cleansers.
Oh, that's a really good word for them.
I stole it.
I think that's my favorite word for them.
You can steal it. I stole it from someone smarter than me. Yeah. So
I think that's how folk music works, is we just, you know.
We steal.
You steal someone else's phrase. And
you're right. So yeah, those are interesting because when you open up Nine Pin, there's 15 cuts, and you're thinking, oh, that's a lot of music, and it is a lot of music. But three of them are just these 40, 50-second, you know, getting you from here to there type of things. And the titles, I think your intention is to do that. But it's a nice combination of the accordion. Oh, by the way, on the last of what I would call these palate cleansers, To Come. Am I wrong or am I so – I grew up listening to the Beatles. Is that backwards? Is there part of that that's played backwards? Is there a really, really talented accordion player that can make it sound that way?
Oh, I love the idea of an accordion player being that talented, but no, you're totally right. It is actually the instrumental song Fine Times at Our House. It's that song being played backwards.
Okay. Good. I didn't catch that because it's backwards, but I kept thinking, these aren't this is being okay, good, perfect. You answered one of my big questions. Not a big question, but one that was kind of gnawing at me is how's this working out? Okay, great. Well, you have a new, you've mentioned twice, and I don't want you to get away. I think we've got the feel of 9-10 and what you're doing, which is just they're plush, gorgeous lyrics that you deliver so well. You said twice you have a new one, something new that may drop this fall.
I do, yeah. So my new album is called Grenade, and it is being released with Smithsonian Folkways this fall, and I'm really just really happy to be working with Smithsonian. You know, they're celebrating, it's their 70th anniversary this year, and their recordings of, you know, people like Elizabeth Cotton and Lucinda Williams and Gene Ritchie and countless others have been so influential. You know, this goes back to the beginning of the interview, which is just, you know, listening to old recordings, and so it's really an incredible honor and a privilege to be joining their sort of new generation of folkways artists, and you know, I'm joining Anne and Elizabeth, who are another great kind of really progressive experimental old time duo, There are a few more artists that have yet to be announced who are wonderful, wonderful artists. And so, yes, I think it's just a group of us who really come from similar places, which is, you know, roots. We have roots in the old music, and we're sort of kind of forward moving and forward thinking about how we can manipulate or, you know, restructure old music and either, you know, fit it into our own songs or give them a, you know, a different flavor for you know, a new era. And so that is a really exciting prospect for me. Grenades is largely centered around my father's immigration story. Nice. He immigrated from Grenada to Canada when he was 14. He immigrated alone. It's a really fascinating and, you know, a terrifying and a fascinating and a really,
moving.
I'll say heartwarming story, moving story. Yeah. And so, as you said, there are palate cleansers on Nine Pin, and without giving too much away about the album, there are also palate cleansers on Grenades, and
good.
Those palate cleansers are actually excerpts of interviews, of an interview that I had with my dad on the last days of 2017. Yeah, so it'll be, you know, it'll be different, and I'm hoping that, you know, fans of Nine Pin and fans of Sorrow Bound will kind of come with me on this, what I hope will be kind of a journey.
It will be, and the great thing, Kai, is Smithsonian Folkways, their CDs are presented in a way you're going to have a lot of room to discuss in liner notes. Everything I get from them is like a package. And so you'll get the music, and you'll get a lot of information, a lot of written material, you know, so you can just kind of read and learn. So you're going to be able to supplement the music with whatever words that you think are appropriate. But they never skimp on what we used to call liner notes. And so there's little booklets involved in all their releases, which is great.
Yeah, I agree. They've been huge on that, and I actually just put the finishing touches on the essay that will be included with the songs.
Very good. This is I'm very excited for you, and I'm excited to get to see you and finally get to talk to you. And I just wanted to meet you at Grey Fox. I didn't have time to do what we're doing now. I just wanted to, this is me, this is the face, and I want to talk to you, and you were very nice in getting back with me and letting this come together for the listeners of Unreal Bluegrass. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for having me on, Steve.
And they can find you. There's a website. Tell us the website. Everybody's got to have a website so they know where you're going to be and what's going to be going on.
Sure. So my website is very straightforward. It's www.kayakater.com. And I also have Twitter. I have a Facebook page, and I have an Instagram page. So if you listen to this interview or, you know, you like it, you can get in touch with me through the contact submission or through any of those other mediums.
Well, I've enjoyed this so much. Thanks for explaining of what's going on in your heart and your head as you do your songs, because they really are. They can be overpowering, I think, to an audience, and you've really fleshed out what you're doing and what you're going to do in the future. And, gosh, I can't wait for the next one. I can't wait for Grenades.
Thank you so much, Steve.
All right. I'll let you go back to the rest of your day, and then we'll talk another time. When the new one comes out, I'll try to catch it.
All right. Sounds good. Looking forward to talking to you again.
All right. See you. Bye.
Bye.